right, guys. So we got a very special guest here today on the podcast. My good high school friend, Kiana Stevens from San Francisco. Where in San Francisco do you live, Kiana?
I live in the Richmond District in San Francisco.
Okay. So, okay. I'm learning, because I feel like Hawaii is so bad with its suburbs. I'm still learning what is technically part of San Francisco and what is not. So is Richmond one of those areas that's like, oh, it's an area of San Francisco, or is it actually separate? I'm
so
sorry.
So you're talking about Oakland. That's what you're talking about.
Oh, wait. Okay. Oh, my God. Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. So the Bay Area includes everything. It includes Oakland, San Francisco, North Bay, which is Marin County, and San Jose, and Mountain View. But I do live in San Francisco proper.
Okay.
Although a lot of people would argue with you and say that the neighborhood that I live in is not really San Francisco because it's so far out from city center and like not a lot of people go out there. It's kind of like how when you were living, you know, like at the last stop.
In Brooklyn. Okay, fair enough.
So that's where I am.
I feel like.
But it is San Francisco.
Okay. See, I feel like growing up on an island, you know, just it's stunted that way of thinking, because, you know, like there's Kailua, there's Kaneohe, everything's part of the city and county, like Oahu, Honolulu. So it's all right. Well, anyway, thank you. I was great seeing you over Thanksgiving. I'm glad we both got to watch a little more Jessica Jones since then. I've done with episode 8, and you just finished episode 9, correct?
I just finished episode 9.
Okay, so. We're not going to go too heavy into spoilers, guys, but, you know, just keep in mind, this is a spoiler-friendly show. I'm personally probably going to get little bits of episode 9 spoiled for me today, so just turn off if you don't want to hear it. Fast forward, I don't care, but, I mean, listen to it. We're going to have some great talks. Feel like you're part of it. But anyway, okay, so I guess the first question has to be, did you watch, Daredevil when it came out, was it this spring?
I think so.
Okay. Was it last fall? End of last... Oh, maybe it was last November.
Was it?
It's always like, oh, did I watch this before I went home? Or, like, after I went home? So it's like, I think it must have been last fall, because that's, like, their whole shtick. Like, oh, Marvel...
Right,
fall,
yeah. Netflix.
Okay.
Trying to match the TV stations. Well, so that's the funny thing. I actually did not watch Daredevil.
Oh, wow. I did not know that. That kind of makes this even better.
And it's really interesting because I did try to watch Daredevil. All of my, you know, I'm a really big comics fan. I've been reading comics since I was a kid. You know, wouldn't say that I have encyclopedic knowledge, but like I'm a really big Marvel fan. I'm familiar with Daredevil. And so everybody, you know, all of my friends were really stoked for this show, even the ones who didn't necessarily like comics. And I literally watched like 2 minutes and 30 seconds of it and hit the pause button. And I was just like, fuck this shit.
Really? Oh, this is so funny. You're not alone.
Daredevil's not, you know, Daredevil's not my favorite character in the Marvel universe.
He's kind of an angry psycho.
Yeah.
He's an angry psycho.
Well, you know, the thing that I could never get over was his sense of Catholic justice, which I just don't relate to at all. And also I've always like personally been more into tortured heroes. So his whole like Christian righteousness thing didn't really jive with me.
Are you a Moon Knight fan? Is that who you read all the time?
I mean,
the most
I'll admit
tortured, creepy, crazy Marvel character. Right?
A man after my own heart.
All right.
No, I was originally like a really big Spider-Man fan.
Oh,
you know,
because
he's got, you know, the whole Gwen Stacy thing going on, and he's got like, oh my god, I must protect my Aunt Gwen, and like
that, and like, whoa, oh, and everyone hates me, but like,
yeah,
I have this weird sense of I think one of like the earliest like comics I read, it was like a Spider-Man Venom duo because they have to stop Carnage.
Oh, yeah.
And at the end, he has to betray Venom because he knows that at the end of the day, he can't trust him. And J. Jonah Jameson makes some smug remark like, oh, man, well, Cap wouldn't have done that. And then Spider-Man just gets in his face. And you know what, man? Like, I'm not Cap. Cap would have found another way. I'm just me trying to do the right thing. And it's like, oh, love you, Spidey.
Yeah.
Love you, Petey.
Yeah.
I guess I should ask before we talk more about the show you brought on to talk about. Are you, in terms of comic reading, are you reading Ultimate Universe? Are you reading any of the main, well, I guess the end of 616? Are you just like a dab here and there, just more in love with the character kind of thing? Like that, because that's where I vibe, honestly, a little bit more. So.
I'm really more in love with the character than I am with any one specific plot line. I mean, you know, I've read all the big Marvel plot lines. Like I read Civil War.
Go on Wikipedia and study it. Because it's
awesome. Right. Exactly. Like we were just talking about, like, exactly. even if I know, the way I read comics is actually, I read them by artist.
That's right. You were an artist. You are.
Yeah.
Well, sorry. You are an artist.
I am an artist. I'm a lapsed artist, but I do sometimes dabble in fan art.
Yeah. That's great. I'm a lapsed many things, so it's fine.
When I find a colorist or a line work artist or even a comics writer that I really like, that's how I read comics. I tend to follow them around, like, no matter what they're doing. Like, I love Brandon Graham's work right now. I love Marjorie Liu. And Bendis, I mean, Bendis, I don't know.
Yeah. Brian Michael Bendis, right? He's the original. When did Jessica Jones when did that comic originally come out? It was because it wasn't under that title. It had Alias, that's right.
Yeah, Alias Investigations. And I think it's like she's a fairly new character. I think only like early 2000s. It can't have been any earlier than that.
I wasn't sure if it was like early 90s or early 2000s, but
yeah.
Honestly, if I look at the art I've seen from it probably makes sense to be early 2000s. Okay. Because Daredevil, a character very familiar with, enjoyed the show from a fanboy perspective and also, like, real quickly from a cinematic perspective, because they did do a lot of different things that were not seen in the Marvel Universe, because it technically is part of the MCU. It is.
Right. Right. Well, they reference it in Jessica Jones, which actually is the first time we've ever seen any MCU character address like what happened to all the people.
Well, see, that's not true, because that happens in Daredevil.
It did,
but not as heavily. Like it feels more like an offhanded remark.
Okay.
Like where in Jessica Jones, it's like, yes, we are showing a specific type of superhero right now, a specific lens on this entire world. Whereas Matt Murdock was, well, we put a filter on the lens and we're doing different things with it, but we're still telling what is, to me, a traditional superhero story.
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, the big complaint I got from people who weren't fans of it was like, it's too violent, dude. And I'm like, yeah, I guess so.
I heard that. That actually is not my complaint.
That's why I was at first going to be shocked if you did say that to me, knowing you. Not that you're into violence.
I have a pretty high tolerance for it. I mean, I'm a fan of Deadpool. You got to have
This deserves.
I know
we're gonna
get off tangent
here. We'll talk about Dead Note. We'll talk about movies near the end. Let's get back. Okay. Didn't watch Daredevil. Not a huge fan. So, what was your whole like reaction to this? Netflix bought this franchise or is partnered with this franchise, and not just we're making Jessica Jones, we're making this whole Marvel Defenders, like this new category of superhero TV.
They're very regular people, at least as much as a superhero can be. You know, like Luke Cage and Jessica Jones and Matt Murdock, they're all, you know, they're not flashy like S.H.I.E.L.D. is. They're not, and that's a really interesting choice to me. And I feel like it does make so much sense. And I was surprised at how much I liked Jessica Jones after having almost no interest in Daredevil, because it goes to show that like Netflix isn't just looking to make one kind of show out of these characters, even though they all come from the same franchise. So that's really interesting to me.
Exactly, because, you know, I'm not, believe it or not, you know how much TV I watch. I'm
oh
not...
my god, so much TV.
All right, well, our audience knows. So. But I actually am not watching Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or Agent Carter, which is kind of a big deal to me, mostly because it is actually part of the MCU universe as well.
Mm-hmm.
But
the why aren't you watching them?
I didn't get into them.
Yeah.
I don't know why. And people have told me to get around on it, and like they do a good job of building the whole like what in my mind doesn't feel like a true comic book universe, but feels like a comic book cartoon universe, which is what I compare everything to. Like that's my bread and butter. You know, like I didn't grow up looking right. at Batman on the pages of like a comic, which
no,
many
you watch
kids
this
did.
Saturday morning.
Exactly. I watch, you know, what's Kevin, what's his name, do the voice of Batman.
Batman Beyonds? That's the best version of animated Batman.
Oh,
I will die on that hill.
Should we try to bring back Shway if something's cool? It's like, oh, way Shway. So that show is so 90s.
Oh, it's so 90s, but I love it. There's or like Teen that... Titans. Oh, were Teen... you ever really into Teen Titans?
I did enjoy Teen Titans, mostly because Tara was my favorite character.
Of course.
Well, she's blonde. You know, I have these weird, you know, whatever. Off
whatever.
Topic. Okay. Well, because my big thing was, after I saw Daredevil, and what I assume they would continue, is there's this more, I don't want to say like, trend, but because there's this greater need for more television content, a game which Netflix is playing very heavily handed into, there's this desire to experiment. Like if you look at the Marvel universe, including Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., it's very formulaic television.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very formulaic storytelling, and it's not bad. I enjoy it. It's sensational, it's great.
Yeah.
It's action packed. It fills a very specific role. As does Arrow on the Flash, which is superhero. It's great. They've done a good job of building this like Saturday morning cartoon mixed with this like soapy vibe, but it still is very formulaic television. I don't watch that and expect to be majorly shocked. Like usually I watch that show, I'm like, oh my god, are they gonna release that villain now? It's like, oh, they are. Or like, oh, are they gonna do that point now? It's like, oh, they are. Whereas like Jessica Jones, Daredevil,
right.
Like, oh, what are they gonna do? You know, yeah. And that's a great feeling, and it's one.
Well, you know, right? They're hitting all the.
Oh, are you still there?
I'm still here.
Tight. Okay. Yeah. Well, no. What I was saying is, it's a great feeling, and it's something that I feel like it's hard for a fanboy, or it's necessarily hard for someone to release to, because. You kind of want to go into these films or these representations of someone you love with like kind of over analytically and with this eye like,
yeah.
Okay, I know what I am expecting to see and I'm going
to
judge
and what you're hoping
it.
To see and
yeah,
what you
judge
want.
Based
like...
on it. Yeah. Whereas this, it's like, well, I have an idea of what it could be and I just want to sit along for the ride that this one director is giving his very specific interpretation of. And I'm glad that this whole Defenders universe creation has loosely threaded themes, but he's staying true to the character, which honestly is really important in comics and something I forget sometimes too. I think, you know, he's not universe building at all, and he hasn't so far. He's surrounded this world around one character, and shit, that's hard to do. That's why, like, so many of these newer Marvel movies, they're not really... It's like, they should just be, like, Marvel Civil War, Marvel this. Like, they should just do arc events instead of give everyone these one-shot movies. Like, fuck that.
Oh, my God, I know. But it's all in the contract, you know, the actor's contract. So they're like, if I'm going to play a superhero, I want my own movie.
Well,
but they still won't give Black Widow one.
Yeah, that's another really upsetting topic, which we also probably will get into as well. But other than freshness, what Were you expecting something as topical as this? I was not. Mostly because I hadn't read the comic book. And I didn't think they were going to be able to turn around something so dark and what almost I was worried was going to come out like, oh, a man writing about victimization and rape. This is going to be like fucking Game of Thrones terrible bullshit that they do right. sometimes.
I was
a little worried about that. So I was excited. But once I started reading a little more, I was like, fuck, I hope they don't like, I hope there isn't terrible backlash for this or something, you know?
Right. So I was not familiar with the original plotline of Alias, but I've read some of B. Michael Bendis's other works. He wrote Powers for many, many years, which is, so I already kind of knew that he's really interested as a writer and in his characters in themes of like power and like how do people use power and how does it control them and how do they control it? So I was expecting that. Yeah. So for a little bit of context, Powers is a series that takes place in a completely different universe. So like there's no heroes that you are necessarily familiar with, but all the archetypes are there. Mm-hmm. And the series specifically follows a police detective who is a former superhero who lost his abilities.
Oh, that's awesome.
And he works in a division of the police that specifically manages and deals with, you know, events that superhumans participate in.
Okay.
It's called the Powers Division. And so, like it's a really interesting series, and it's totally worth checking out. And
why
PlayStation
is that a show, man?
Is
that the one with the South African?
Yes.
Is that really? That looked so bad from the trailer I saw.
Because
you know the trailer gave me no information of the plot or whatsoever, but it just looked overdone.
The one that PlayStation did, right?
Please tell me you've seen some of it and it's good.
I saw the first two episodes, and the problem is the only reason I haven't watched the rest of it is because for the whole first season was only released on like PlayStation Television, but I don't have any game consoles, and I was so mad about it.
Sad life there.
I know, it's really sad.
No, you're a real person. It's fine. Well, I definitely want to read that now, and I had no idea that was him. Is he involved in the PlayStation show? Because maybe I didn't realize which Powers that was. Fuck, I'm such an idiot.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, that's awesome. And
yeah, so I kind of knew that it was going to deal with those themes, but I never expected that it was going to be so topical with regards to things like gender relations and women's rights and like, it was. I mean, look, I'll tell you this. Every single woman you know has a guy like Kilgrave in her life. I guarantee it. I guarantee she's got at least one, like probably five, but there's at least one where you can look back on your life and be like, oh yeah, that guy.
Yeah. It's also unfortunate when you look back much older in your life as a mature person and be like, you know, I wasn't terrible, but you can definitely be like, yeah, I'm definitely could be someone's that guy in that situation, you know. But, yeah, you're right. Like, even the character of Rachel, the actress name is Rachel. Oh, my God. Tracy. Crap.
Trish.
Jesus. Sorry.
Trish Walker.
Yeah, the actress's name is Rachel Taylor. That's why. She's Australian. Even her role and even the whole setup with the mother and the like child actress like relationship, that even felt awkwardly. It was like, oh, am I watching like SVU? But if SVU didn't feel like a soap opera kind of like that felt really like when she's in the car. And you know, she's like, oh, what is that? It's like, oh, what? The rabbit hole is so dark.
It felt kind of shoehorned in a little bit. I mean, obviously, I don't know if it will come into play later in the series, but
well, I think that's why, like, I at first thought they were going to go with this, like, oh, this, like, young child star is very gung-ho about, like, being a good person, and, like, she wants, but, like, no, like, she didn't want anything to do with that. It was her mom's publicity idea, mm-hmm. which became very clear in that, like, Jessica kind of ended up saving her a little, which...
Right.
I love Kristen Ritter in the show. Can we talk about that?
I love them both. I love their relationship. But yes, Kristen Ritter.
I was worried she was gonna come off a little like, a little too snappy and like, a little too modern is not the right word, but I don't know how to replace it right now. Like,
I think okay. When I think of her, I think of Don't Trust the Bee in Apartment 23.
Right, right, yeah.
Which is in a lot of ways a similar character, but she plays that character. I've never seen more than a couple episodes of the show, so I don't know what that character's name is, but she plays it very smarmy.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's what I think you're thinking of.
Okay.
And I had a similar concern. I was like, oh, is this gonna be like a jokey show? And it ended up being pretty dark.
And she uses that smarminess like with just the right amount of degree to like
right.
pull you out as well as like drag you back in too. Like I'm thinking about great moments, especially in the pilot, where it's like, I don't care what kinky shit you're into, but just keep it to yourselves. Like that's a
yeah.
I guess
she's great.
Okay. And like my big thing is I hate talking about body image and stuff, but like I'm glad that, you know, they didn't get someone who looks like Trish Walker, who is like an entertainment figure in the world, to play like right. that kind of role. Right. But they also didn't get someone who's like yoked. Like, they could have, because she has super strength, it's easy sometimes to want to, like, associate that with, mm-hmm. like, oh, let's get someone incredibly athletic looking.
Right.
And it's like, no, let's get this girl who looks like she's been through some shit. I mean, Kristen Ritter, like, she hasn't, obviously. I'm sure she's a wonderful actress. I hope she's mm-hmm. had a great life. But, I mean, she has the look. Like, she could, you know, she could have right. a little cuckoo
going. She
could
pull it off.
Or she could have, like, you know, a fierce... conflicted, you know, insides. Wow, that was vague. But
no, I see what you mean though, and I agree with you. Like she really can pull the like badass bitch thing off. I hope swearing is okay on
it
this.
It is. I label this podcast as explicit. So
okay.
So good apples aware, and I'm sure I don't have near enough listeners to get warrant any of their like, oh, you know, you were flagged because some kid listened to your podcast. Well, I guess it is start with story time, so.
You never know. Google search gone awry.
All right. Well, let's get into the big, let's talk about Kilgrave.
Oh. Okay, let's talk about
so
it.
So let me start.
What do you want to talk about?
Let me start by saying in Daredevil, one of the very positive reactions, Wilson Fisk, the Kingpin, mm-hmm. was done very well. You know, we don't really know his name for the first like three or four episodes, which is why I did enjoy that. I thought we weren't going to actually hear the name Kilgrave in the first episode, but I'm kind of glad we did. Mm-hmm. So that was my expectation, but so far he's absolutely terrifying. Do you find moments where certain behavior of his or certain choices, is it David Tennant, the actor's name?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That he's making that feel a little too far in a way that detracts from what he's trying to do?
Hmm.
Like animations, certain ways he's saying something to Jessica, or, you know. Or does it add to this like weird tick of this sociopathic, I stalk you.
I didn't find it distracting. I don't really like David Tennant as an actor, so I kind of knew that I was going to find some of those things annoying.
Okay.
I hated his run on Doctor Who. I mean,
I was about to ask you about that, because I know he was a doctor. I don't watch Doctor Who, but I knew he had a fan base.
I don't watch it the way a lot of Doctor Who fans watch it, but
okay.
when there's a big episode or a good episode, I kind of have enjoyed following the plot over the last few years. But I just don't really like him outside of British television. He's a very British actor. He's
He's like very animated and big, and he does stand out a lot on screen.
Yeah, and so like
while Trish Walker fights through her Australian accent.
I was so invested in the storyline that I think his acting didn't bother me, but I totally see how it could bug some other people. I mean, and then on the other end of the spectrum, you have the fangirls who like came over from Doctor Who because they're just obsessed with him. And I never really understood that, but.
Okay. Well, I guess I need another comparison. So I think I'm going to have to start watching Broadchurch. That's what I've been told.
I just binge watched season 2 of Broadchurch.
Is it a procedural or is it series based crime in England?
So British TV is a little bit different, right? They've kind of been on the Netflix model of storytelling for much longer.
Yeah, because they're not as into ads as we are.
Right. So they have shorter seasons.
Yeah.
Where they'll tell, like, they will go all in for one, like, big overarching story. And that's what Broadchurch is. It is a procedural, but it's all about one case.
So it's all serious. It is truly, like, fully serialized.
Yeah.
Okay. That's fair. And I mean, like, hey, I need to watch more networks, but I love a lot of British shows. And Hulu.
Oh, I love TV.
Hulu and Netflix has opened me up to a lot. Like, Peaky Blinders on BBC is fantastic. Yeah.
Show, have you ever seen that? Or the show that
Misfits?
No. I wasn't really a big fan of Misfits for a couple of seasons. I was living there at the time, which helped.
What my only thing I didn't like about Misfits is, do you know the actress, I think it's Natalie Emmanuel or something, she plays Missandei on Game of Thrones?
Oh, does she?
Yeah, and her only... I remember her character in Misfits was in one episode. She had zero dialogue, and the only things the actual main character said about her at the end were, well, I don't remember her name. She was great in the sact, and, well, she loved it up the ass. So all her character did in that show was be naked...
And have anal sex.
Get murdered, and then they made a reference to the fact that she liked anal sex. Yeah, I'm sorry. It's an unfair world, Kiana. It's just a very unfair
world. That's okay. That show had some great moments and some really questionably written scenes as well.
But I feel like that's the brilliance of British television. Like you watch a show like Fresh Meat, and you literally watch a relationship between what is allegedly a 19-year-old girl and a 40-something-year-old professor. And they just take it a little bit too far. But then you're just like, but it's British. I feel like that's what they do.
Right. And so Broadchurch is exactly like that. And David Tennant on Broadchurch is exactly how David Tennant on British television should be. But I'm not sure that translates well to American television.
To especially this dark, twisted Jessica Jones obsession.
Yeah. although at the same time, I think his this British ridiculousness does, you know, while it detracts from his performance as a villain, I think it so much enhances the side of the character that's that like friend zone obsessed dude.
Oh, I hate that because I'm worried that's like my biggest fear, that I will become that person.
Oh god.
The friend zone obsessed murderer.
Steve.
The thing is this. I'm too empathetic. I don't have any sociopathic tendencies.
Right. I don't think you're enough.
I'll like start thinking about doing something bad to someone. I'm like, oh, that's fucked up and terrible. And I'm really sad. I should call them.
We're safe then.
Well, thank God my parents didn't experiment on me with needles.
I know, right?
In your spine. Ugh. You haven't had one of those, right? Like spinal tap.
I have not. No, okay. I've been pretty lucky. I haven't been in the hospital a whole lot.
This is like why I'm afraid of getting shingles, because I'm pretty sure you need a spinal tap. I know that's super random, but I had chicken pox as a kid, which puts me in a high risk group for singles.
Everybody had chicken pox as a kid.
No, I thought like our generation was the one, or like our specific year was the one where you're starting the actual vaccine is to supposed to prevent like an occurrence of the actual disease at all. None of the like mild chicken pox.
Oh, yeah. Everybody in my family had it, though.
Oh, thank God.
There were too many of us.
That makes me feel better because like everyone in my preschool had it, and I think that's why this happened. Oh, wow. That's super about comic books, right? Because, like, illnesses, blah, 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 Walking Dead. Moving back to Jessica Jones. Sorry. About that. No, that was my fault.
No, I definitely push us towards tangents, too.
It's a fun way to talk. It's a fun way to be. Also, this is 2015. If you're watching South Park, you'd get that reference. Okay.
I'm not watching South Park. I've never really...
That's fine.
Except when I'm with you guys.
We'll have another discussion about that another time. But, because you should be. Because you'll love it anyway. Mm-hmm. I guess, okay. At the end of the day, this is what I would love to know. Is Jessica Jones a show you think anyone over the age of 18 can watch and not necessarily all enjoy to the fullest extent, but appreciate? Do you think we need, and B, do you think a Luke Cage series like about Luke Cage can fill a similar role? Because if they're going, because in my sense, they have to shift gears again. They can't revisit this great mm-hmm. Jessica Jones universe they've built until, because they've committed to this other structure. And so, you know, A, do you think it's a worthwhile enough show that, like, to carry itself through this with enough people behind it to carry itself through this with enough positive things to, like, carry itself through this haze, which is now going into the Marvel Descenders universe? Or do you think she's gonna bleed into what I feel will be a slightly off the beaten path, told from a few different perspectives type of generic superhero instead of what she is right now?
Man, I hope not. I hope that's not what they do with her character. Although, that's kind of what happens to her in the comics after this, you know. Not that you can necessarily predict.
Right. But I guess... Okay. I guess so far, Jessica Jones... And a lot more so than Daredevil, feels so tightly connected to this story of Kilgrave... This heavy story with her past, that mm-hmm. seems like a mini almost anthology or mini series about that, and not a true necessarily an origin story, but a like true story just about that event. Whereas with Daredevil, or with a more I suppose traditional hero,
mm-hmm.
his past is very connected. The villain he is fighting is very connected to that season and to his character, but it very much feels like we're building a person who episodically is gonna be, you know, Batman-y detective solving as well as like street brawling to save Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah.
Whereas like Jessica wants to be her own type of hero, which is great. If you know, I'm sorry, I'm talking. I'll let you talk after this. If you know you want to be your own type of show, and that's why we like mm-hmm. Jessica. But it already is not, because it's part of this greater universe. So I'm just like, I'm at conflict with that.
And right.
I want your perspective. And more importantly, I want a perspective of someone. Do you appreciate that Marvel and more a lot mainstream society has taken the time to tell this story? Because it's about a pretty like topical subject. And more importantly, it's about a woman who's badass, not generic.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and I think Jessica also, she's definitely like a flawed character, like still really strong, but also you can tell she's like kind of fucked up. And I think it's really cool to like finally see that on a screen, you know, to see that like that women can play those kinds of characters too, and that people will write them, and that like, and that the response to the show has been so good. But getting back to what you were saying about like the fact that it feels like a self-contained story, and the fact that Kilgrave is such a, you know, at least conceptually, a terrifying villain, I almost wonder whether they, like, whether they could even top that. And obviously I haven't gotten to the end of the season, so I don't know whether they're going to wrap everything up satisfactorily, but I almost wonder, like, is it even possible? Is it even smart to do a second season of a show like that? Like, I would love to see her character return in the Luke Cage show, especially since this is not really a spoiler, but like in the comics, eventually, like, they get married.
Yeah.
I love that relationship. I really want to see that happen. Like, I would love to see your character come back, but like, I don't know if that necessarily means something more than like a supporting role, because like, what kind of story do you tell with her after Kilgrave?
You know, is it like Luke is dealing with his own thing? He comes home, he's like, oh, Jessica, right, what case you follow me now? She's like, oh, some say, or, you know, like,
it, like, I don't want to lose
it. Feels like
her.
A gimmick. Then it becomes a gimmick, or like a one-dimensional caricature.
Right.
So
I don't know.
Yeah. That's the wall I'm at now. Like, Daredevil, you're only
a little bit more than halfway through. So like, don't you feel like it kind of depends how well the end of the season gets wrapped up?
65% yes to that question. The remaining percent goes to this. Again, if this were a standalone series, there would be literally no concern, no question about that. Because it's not, and because logic, like my internal logic, is telling me, well, they can't tell this story again anymore.
No.
And I don't know if I yet am able to separate the character from the story directly.
I think that's fair.
No matter of like wrapping up or open-endedness can preserve that for me. I guess that makes sense. Like, she has to evolve to a point where like, I feel like it's going to be a lot harder to reference and come back to the season.
Right. You know, or like, can they introduce a struggle that's different from just her obsession with Kilgrave?
Right. Yeah. But,
and it's hard for a show to pivot like that. Like, it's a very difficult thing to do well.
It is. And I guess this is the whole, but this is, and then this is a great place to talk about this as well. What if we just told miniseries stories, one-shotters that are loosely, like, connected, kind of like the way the actual comics work before you do a major crossover story?
Well, but Daredevil is not a standalone. Daredevil is like, at least from how it's been described to me, this is something that could go on for at least 3 seasons.
Oh, I know that. But I kind of wish it almost was
had
a
been
standalone.
Yeah.
And then like season 2. Okay. Well, we don't know any of this yet because they haven't made the active choice to do it yet. So I guess this is just like wishful thinking, but okay, the way it works with like,
do you want more crossover?
I don't want more crossover, but if they do have a lot of crossover, what I want is tons more space in between supposed seasons. So for example, I don't want Luke Cage necessarily to be directly after Jessica Jones.
Right, exactly.
It was easy to do that with Daredevil because none of those characters are in that series, whereas you have now the protagonist directly in this series. So
I thought that was going to be an origin story, though. That sounded like it was set in the past, at least from what I've read about it.
Daredevil?
No, the Power Man series.
Oh, is that what you've read about it?
That's what it seems like to me.
Because that makes me a lot happier. if
I mean, like, I'm sure at some point they probably would have to flip a switch and like jump forward for a while, but
Well, I guess then the question is, are all of these shows, because they're going to merge into one crossover series,
I don't know,
like, on the same clock? Or is, like, they're all going to be, like, or are they going to be, like, okay, well, Luke Cage is coming out next, but, like, Jessica Jones is really popular, so let's scratch and remake. So, right. They haven't announced, but Marvel is pretty adamant about their products, like, adhering to
this grand plan.
They've honestly become George Lucas in his catering and caretaking of the Star Wars extended universe.
Oh, man.
Like,
yeah.
Like, you
can, but we all know how that ended up, waving goodbye to canon.
But I think George, despite some of the terrible decisions he made to preserve that franchise, I feel like he literally was doing it from a perspective of care and adoration for his creation and his fans versus Marvel, which is clearly making decisions that benefit business and making money and streamlining the continuity. Like, yeah. And I, you know me, Kiana, I'm Cartoon Man. I love streamlined, simplified continuity. But like, you know what's going on, or you know what went on in Secret Wars, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, have you tried to explain that to someone who doesn't read comics or watch cartoons, but watches the movies, right? Like,
oh God, you could never.
You couldn't do that.
There's so much shit that goes on in the comic book universe that, like, all of these Tumblr people obsessed with, like, Captain America's ass could, like, just never comprehend. I mean, so many aliens, so many, like, mistaken identities, it's just, like, comic books are insane.
They're for crazy people. I mean, like,
you know, and even keeping track of, like, wait, is this the character from this universe? Did you read the Spider Totem Run? Like, this whole thing where, like, apparently Peter Parker is, like, a totem for spiders in all of the multiverses, and then there's somebody who's, like, tracking down all of the spiders in all the multiverses and trying to kill them, and then he has to team up with his, like, parallel universe. That's where the Spider-Gwen run started.
Was this whole
Spider-Man multiverse storyline, and it was just the craziest thing.
Because they actually made a video game loosely based on your Spider-Man and different emanations in the multiverse. There's your noir Spider-Man, your modern day, and your your ultimate, not like ultimate comic Spider-Man, but like the ultimate one with, like, you know, my suit has camo and stuff.
I get what you mean. But yeah, I'm sure that was a tie-in to the comic book plot. But that's just like anybody who's not into comic books would hear that and they'd be like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, a million Spider-Mans? Like, that's what you're into right now?
Yeah. Well, see, like, that's why you have to pick who you share certain details of, like, anything with. Whereas, like, I can talk to a certain friend of mine and be like, oh, dude, yeah, and, like, in Marvel Siege, where, like, part of Asgard has crashed onto Earth, Norman Osborn shows up in an Iron Man suit. But then Captain America comes back as Captain America with a second Captain America who's Bucky behind him. And then there's this awesome war. And it's like, he's like, yeah, dude, that's tight. Whereas, like, someone else is like, dude, I don't know what you said. That sounds dumb. Like, I just want to watch the movie.
Have we talked about how the Captain America 3 trailer looks like a gay love story?
I mean, that's just your bros, Kiana.
They're bros.
It does look like that. Like, what's the line? It's like, I'm sorry. He was my friend. And then Tony's like, thought I was. And it's just like, oh. And then they just cut to, like, the three of them fighting each other.
Oh my God, the tag team fight. It's so sexual.
Well, yeah, there's
sorry.
A shield.
It's so,
and it's so coordinated.
Sexual.
Well, dude, would you not want to see Yaoi, Chris Evans, and who the actor who plays Bucky Barnes?
I think his name's Sebastian something or other. And what do you think I use the internet for, Steven?
This is true, Miss Fan.
What do you think fan fiction is for?
Yeah, look up some lemons. We'll look up some lemons. Oh, great side note. You know, oh yeah, you were there. 50 Shades of Grey. I finally saw it. And then immediately afterwards, we started reading fan fiction.
Yes, Carly sent me many videos of that, and it was really, like, it was the best night of my week. Yeah. I just want you to know that. I'm going to cherish those forever.
Oh, well, I'm glad you'll enjoy me reading, you know, the erotic fan
fiction.
The erotic fan fiction of 16-year-olds from 2004. Oh my god.
Okay. You know, some of it actually is, like, really good writing. But you have to sift through a lot of crap to get there.
Right, but sometimes the crap is like gold poo. Like when someone writes like Bella and Edward's wedding night lemon.
Oh. You know, in hindsight, I really wish that I had written my thesis more about fan fiction, because I'm really fascinated by some of the community, like, hive mind dynamics that happen in fan fiction. Because there are, if you get into a certain fandom enough, you will start to notice certain tropes and certain, like, character traits and phrases that associated with characters, like personality traits associated with characters that don't come from the show or from the book or any of the original media, but they come from the fandom itself.
Yes. And that's kind of awesome. And that's honestly why I like geeky things more than the actual material sometimes.
It's super interesting.
That, but it's true,
no, you know? I like fandom and the fact, like, fandom can be terrible, but fandom can also be really awesome. And I'm super interested in what is the mechanism by which those decisions get made collectively, and like how do you end up with this collective knowledge base?
Well, I mean, Game of Thrones, like, even beyond the series fandom for the show, like the Song of Ice and Fire, that is a book series at a universe literally where the weight of the world is both on the shoulders of the devout book fans and George R. R. Martin. Like, a history of Ice and Fire or whatever is written by George R. R. Martin and the guys who run the Song of Ice and Fire wiki. I think
George R. R. Martin goes over the top, though. I actually don't need that much world building in anything ever.
But I love that, because then it makes it even more like reading history. Like, okay. Here's my justification for this. And you know me, I like certain anime stories, which no matter, like, you can't detail everything, because sometimes when you do the details sound real fucking stupid. Mm-hmm. But what's awesome about details, what is awesome, and I just had this discussion today when I was explaining that, you know, as a 9-year-old, those prequel movies, as terrible as they were, and a part of me at 9 still was like, they gave me an element to my fandom that took it to a whole nother level, that created so much new content for me, that at the end of the day, this is what it allowed me to truly adhere to. Fandom for me, learning details about a world, a show, a universe for me, is not about knowing about it, like, or to be able to talk about it. It's about knowing about it because it makes it that much more real for you.
Yeah.
And that realness to me is what I constantly seek in something I'm watching. Mm-hmm. Not realness, the never-ending quest for realness, you know what I mean? You know, the ability to seamlessly say, yo, I was on Coruscant last night, you know, when I was at home thinking about things.
That's what I really, that's actually the exact reason why I'm so obsessed with that webcomic I was telling you about. Did you ever take a look at it?
You need to send me the link again.
Okay, well,
I remember your description.
Yeah.
It was pretty epic.
For your listeners, I'm obsessed with this webcomic right now. It's called Kill 6 Billion Demons. And it's about a sorority girl who gets pulled into an alternate universe version of heaven. And she's given, like, an all-powerful weapon and she just gets sucked into all of this like existing drama that she had no idea that it ever existed. There's a transgender angel, and she has a drinking contest with the devil, and it's just crazy. But you can see like every page that this guy puts out for this comic, you can see the strings of world building that he's done to like create this super cohesive, detailed, like lush background story for the whole thing. And it's really amazing. And Steven.
Oh my god, okay, I'm really sorry about that. Connection issues, working through the technical glitches, but I think everyone got the last of that web series you were talking about. I like everything I heard about it, but just in case we missed it, could you give the title and artist one more time for the audience?
It's called Kill 6 Billion Demons. I don't know the author's name, actually. He goes by Abaddon on the internet, but I don't think he's made his full name public.
God, that's such like a 2006 deviant art.
I know. Abaddon. Okay, well, one last thing about this series that's kind of interesting and that almost made me not want to read it is that it started as a Homestuck MS Paint forum thread.
I have no comment to that.
Anyway, moving on.
Wait, before we finish and talk about something really serious, topical, and wonderful, can you please explain to some of our audience members who might not know what exactly an MS Paint forum thread is?
Oh, God, Steven, I don't know if I can explain that in a short amount of time.
Okay, you know what? In like 6 months from now, we'll do an episode just about that.
Oh my god!
Switching gears, guys. Storytime with Tofu will now be just about MS Paint forums. Okay, but okay. You know what? I'm gonna ask it. It's an important question. It's something I constantly am thinking about when I'm watching media now, when I am branching out to, or when I'm seeking to create my own new content or whatnot. What do you, not just Jessica Jones, what do you think in general about the state of the female superhero, the state of female actresses in being able to acquire these roles? And it's just, where do you think being a woman, being a female actress, you know, embodying what it means to be, like, have a contemporary sense of, like, you know, womanhood is not the right word. I'm not well equipped to talk about this.
That's
clearly.
Okay.
The main thing is, and I clearly, as we, you know, talked about before, I see this around me, like, it's so easy for a man to love comics.
Right.
They make
it
so easy and almost grossly easy.
It is. I actually quit reading comics in high school because I was so put off by the inability to see myself in any of the major publishing houses' works. Right. So there was a period of 6 or 7 years where I didn't read comic books at all. All through college, you know, I would sort of keep track of what was happening in the plot lines, but I didn't have a pull list. I wasn't buying any issues. I wasn't really following any authors. And it wasn't until just a couple of years ago that I really got back into it. And part of it was this cultural shift that you see happening to bring, I guess, I feel like we're at a really interesting point in history right now, because every single day I feel like I see more and more people talking about female characters in a really progressive way. And yet, like individual people, you know, my friends and individual authors and
you know, it's easy to read an article about
and critics and articles, and like there are now entire websites. I mean, look at what the Mary Sue alone has done for reporting on women in comics. Mm-hmm. But you know, so you have all of these cool people who are out there saying cool things and like really putting their neck out on the line for that, and that's amazing. But the industry hasn't caught up yet. You know, you hear from somebody, like, Gail Simmons, who did the Secret Six run at DC. And, you know, she's one of the most well-respected female comics writers in the entire industry. I mean, she's been doing it for more than 30 years. And even her on her Tumblr, like, despite the level of respect that and history that she commands, you know, has alluded to having trouble with DC management, has alluded to having trouble with getting certain plot lines through. I mean, like, we still don't have Marvel dealing meaningfully in any way in any of its big titles with gay or lesbian or transgender characters. And when it is done, it's really ham-handed and super, like, shoehorned in. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when I stopped reading trade comics, I got really into web comics. And honestly, like, as much as I love series like Jessica Jones, and I might even go back and watch Daredevil now that I have a little bit more confidence in what Netflix is doing with the universe, you know, and that stuff is really fun, and it's, I think, kind of accessible in a big way, but when you really get down to, like, where innovation in comic stories are happening, I really do feel that web comics are where it's at. Like, that's where you're going to find genuine representation. That's where you're going to find... Oh.
Did you hear that? Sorry, what was that?
I didn't hear that. It might have been me tapping on the table.
Oh, no worries. Sorry. I just thought I was losing my mind. Probably watching too many terrifying animes.
But yeah.
No, yeah. Here's the thing about representation that I'm constantly in conflict with inside. And mm-hmm. I think I run into the problem you brought up earlier. And that I think this is something that not necessarily 2004 comic movies were doing, but maybe mm-hmm. around, like, mid-2000s comic book series were actually doing. You mm-hmm. get a lot, this, like, new diverse, and maybe this is very lens through X-Men for me, mm-hmm. but you get this new diverse group of mutants, and let's do mm-hmm. mutants because it's the easiest way to go global with it. Mutants are everywhere, and you get all these international mutant characters that are now mainstream canon. Is that cheap? Does that feel cheap? At the time, it didn't to me. As a mature mm-hmm. adult now, it feels incredibly cheap. It feels incredibly cheap to me to have a character who's hijabbed and named Dust, and the hijab is almost more of a plot than an actual insight into her actual character.
Right, and that's the thing. It's the tendency of, like, you know, I think big publishing houses, they're like, oh, like, people are talking about these issues, like, let's put a character in there that matches that, but they make it about the stereotype instead of about the character.
Right. Which is why it took me a while to want to pick up the new Miss Marvel, but I did.
It's
really, really good. It obviously, it's important that she's Pakistani, she's mm-hmm. A Muslim American, but it doesn't, that's not a constant,
that's not the point thing. Of it.
Yeah, you know, and that's why what's so frustrating to me, like, it's so hard to write something like that.
Mm-hmm. But I think bringing it back to the original purpose of our being here, I actually think that Jessica Jones did some of that really well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anybody would look at Jessica Jones or look at Jerry Hogarth and be like, these are supposed to represent monoliths of what a female superhero is. It's very much its own story, and they're never, like, they mention the concept of, you know, like, they make the Jewel superhero outfit and they show that a couple of times,
and
but
they,
it's
and
it's,
mock it because it's ridiculous.
Right, but I think they never, like, the series never tries to hold her up as, like, a template or a model for other women or other super women, and I think that's definitely one of its strengths. Because really all, like, you already have those kinds, like, nobody ever looks at a male character and is like, oh, like, you know, he's just there to be eye candy or whatever. Like, they are all usually pretty nuanced, or like, and nobody expects a single male character to represent his entire gender.
Right. And no, no. And it's never been that for me. It's more like, I love like these female characters. Like, I love Emma Frost.
Oh, oh,
I love Psylocke.
Yeah.
But why do these all powerful female characters, why is she wearing high ass heels and a fucking corset where her tits are hanging out? Kind
because,
of situation.
Because sex appeal, Steven.
I
no,
know
I,
that, yeah, I know that, that. But like, how do you.
How do you move
how do you,
away?
How do you challenge. Trope. How do you challenge that? How do you challenge that softly, yet progressively? Because I feel like it was softly challenged in 2004 to no avail, and it's been reevaluated and definitely much more with much more vigor and understanding challenged again. But you still have such pushback from this bullshit idea that we need to adhere to what was because what was. Was better than what will be, or some nonsense like that. Like,
I mean, I agree with you from a social standpoint, but I think you have to. I think the only way you're gonna get an answer for that is looking at business.
There we go.
You know, Marvel and DC, and even an Image to a certain degree, they all kind of still believe that their fan base.
Are men.
You know that they are men,
right?
Despite ever increasing numbers of reports that like women will read comics at the same rate as men if they're offered things that are interesting to them,
right? But I guess the question is, and the question that every male arrogant fan will always bring up is like, well, what about all the female fans who already like the way comics have been? Like, why? And it's like.
I'm sorry.
And my reaction is, yeah, there's so few of them that they're a caricature of themselves.
I know. That to me is not. It's such a straw man argument to me.
Okay.
You know, it's just very like. I think the other thing is that, you know, nobody's saying that there won't always be some of those kinds of titles. Like I would never, you know, sorry. I actually, while I would love to see media in general move towards a certain set of moral principles that matches mine, like I'm also never going to be the kind of person who thinks that like, you know, pulp fiction stories like that should never be written. I just, like, for me, it's more about diversity and availability of types of content. Like, that
you
can
just don't
be...
want to be slurried with the same thing over and over
again. Like, I'm not trying to take away your toys. You know, that's the thing.
Right.
It's like, right. You... Or I'm not trying to take away any of those things. I just think that, like, any company that is as big as those companies are and with that much money and with that much historical talent can afford to take a couple of risks to put some interesting, different, new, diverse things out there.
That could open up the world. You could be the one show that catalyzes a whole revolution of new shows.
Exactly.
And on this fun note, because that was awesome. Thank you so much. That's not a perspective we get a lot of on the show because I am terrible at articulating it. I always tried to touch it, and I think I was like, oh, it's so important, but I don't know how to go in depth about it. So thank you a lot. But
thank you for having me.
Of course, we have about 4 minutes left.
Okay.
There's a ton we could talk about, but what I would love to talk about, since we are talking about creating awesome new content with great female characters. Do you want to see an X-23 series?
Oh my god, yes.
Right?
Oh my, yes.
And specifically, do you want to see an X-23 series not on any of these terrible networks, but either on FX or AMC?
Yeah.
Right?
I would be so down.
Okay, and like...
I really would.
How many of those comics have you read?
Not many, but enough. I mean, she's a great character.
Yeah, and I feel like at times they lens her as like kind of the like hot lost teen kind of atmosphere.
Yeah.
But like they don't, and like I'm not gonna lie, there's probably some of that appeal that drew me to it, other than knowing mm-hmm. who the character was in the first place. But there's just so much complexity there. There's so much room for positive Easter egging. There's, you can take a real nice pickaxe to your own side story into the Marvel Universe, and you can have four protagonists, and or sorry, two protagonists and two antagonists that we can follow that all don't have penises and are white. That is that so hard? That's all I want. And I think do you want that? Do you want that with me too?
I want that. I would watch the hell out of that.
What would be the one thing from the comics that you want to see translated other than the Jubilee X-23 release?
I don't know. Other than that, that has
to be there.
I mean, I just have always loved all of her interactions with Wolverine because I think it's such an interesting mirror relationship. And the fact that, you know, well, at least in some of the versions, that like she was created because people were trying to copy him, and like how does that make that work? It's just
exactly.
It's so good. It's really. I love Wolverine too as a character. So
well, and I mean, and this is the perfect dispo to the ending of this wonderful podcast. And X-23, and again, mutants are such a wonderful lens. Yes, I use the word lens, ladies and gentlemen.
Again.
For this wonderful storytelling you can do with these people with powers. Like, what other franchise does Ronnie Johnson, who can like turn leaves in, like turn light up leaves in the sky or something like that, like even something as trivial like that, like you in that series, you have to go in depth and really connect your character's powers is almost like another character in itself. And it sounds like that's what Powers does very well. It explores that relationship.
Yeah, and, it does.
And that's what X-Men, I thought, has always done incredibly well. So,
yeah.
Kiana, it's been super wonderful. Thank you so much for coming on. We're definitely bringing you back. You got to keep watching TV because we're definitely bringing you back.
Well, you just tell me what's good. I know I can always rely on you for more information than is ever necessary about TV.
Yes, you can. And I'm always happy to learn new things from you, as I do every time we hang out. So,
well, thank you very much.
Of course. And thank you, everyone, for listening. As you know, this has been Storytime with Tofu with Steven Toyofuku and my good friend Kiana Stevens. Everyone, you guys have a great day or a great night. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.